This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Thank you very much, Mia. Bonjour tout le monde. Good morning, everyone. On Monday, Canadians elected a new government to stand up to President Trump and to build a strong economy. Canadians also sent a clear message that their cost of living must come down and their communities need to be safe. As Prime Minister, I've heard these messages loud and clear, and I will act on them with focus and determination.
Welcome back to the Law Bites podcast. After a couple of weeks off for the tail end of the federal election, the podcast returns with a look ahead. It's pretty hard to describe the shift in recent months. As most listeners will know, at the start of the year, the Conservatives were riding high in the polls, and a majority win seemed like a sure thing. That had some significant implications for digital policy. Conservatives were standing for the end of Bill C-11, the online streaming bill, the end of Bill C-18, the online news bill, the end of the CBC, at least in English Canada, and a rethinking of the approach that we'd seen to date with respect to online harms. A few months later, we have a new leader in Prime Minister Mark Carney, a new Liberal government, and a very much changed environment in the House of Commons. Now, what does all of this mean for digital policy? Digital policy didn't play a significant role in the campaign. The Liberals did discuss misinformation and seemed to link it to online harms. There was also a doubling down of cultural policy in defense of Canada Strong. Conservatives also talked a little bit about these issues, in particular the online bills, which appeared in their platforms, but it wasn't really a major focal point either, particularly given the dominance of the threats that come from south of the border under the Trump administration. So what may lie ahead for digital policy? Well, this podcast seeks to identify at least some possibilities with three short-term, medium-term, and long-term issues. The short-term will focus on the next 3 to 6 months, essentially now until the summer or early fall, medium-term looking till the end of the year, and longer-term beyond that. I recognize that people's definitions for short, medium, and long-term may differ, but that's what I've got in mind as I walk through these different issues. Let's start first with some of the immediate activities, the three short-term issues. I think the very first, which is likely to happen within the next week or two, is the introduction of a new cabinet. Now, Prime Minister Carney did introduce a new cabinet soon after he was named or elected as the new Liberal leader. And that included some changes, with Stephen Guilbeault returning to what is effectively Canadian heritage and Anita Anand named as the new ICED or industry minister. But that was a pre-election cabinet. With a new cabinet likely to be announced next week, one of the very first signals as to whether or not this will be a continue-the-course approach or perhaps lead us to some significant changes, I think will come from the identity of some of the new ministers, particularly in those two portfolios, which of course play such a critical role when it comes to digital policy in Canada. I think we'll probably get more details when it comes to the mandate letters, but those will take a little bit of time to follow. And so the identity of the ministers, whether this is viewed as an opportunity to bring in some fresh faces and potentially some fresh thinking when it comes to some of these issues, or whether or not it is some of the stalwarts from prior cabinets that again make their way into these portfolios, will give us at least a hint as to whether or not we're likely to see some of the same policies brought back by this government, or whether there's an openness to rethinking some of those issues. Secondly, it seems to me that the digital services tax is going to emerge very quickly as one of the issues that a Carney government is going to have to deal with. Just to refresh, the digital services tax applies to large numbers of multinational companies, primarily in the tech sector, and targets the kinds of revenues that they might generate from data, online advertising, online auction sites, or platforms. Now, the money involved is very, very significant. Parliamentary Budget Officer estimates we're talking about billions of dollars over 5 years. The DST in Canada took effect last year, but the first payments on that are due this summer. It's retroactive, and so those payments will go back 3 years. And so at stake is, even on those first payments, billions of dollars from some of the larger tech companies. Now, certainly a Canadian government would be happy with that revenue. A Trump administration, obviously somewhat less happy to see the Canadian government capturing that revenue, especially to the extent to which it detracts from some of the tax revenue it itself is able to generate from those companies in the United States. DST has been a long-standing trade irritant between Canada and the United States that in some sense replicates the frustration the U.S. have with DSTs around the world. Canada is not alone in this regard, but of course we share a border with the United States. It's one that's at the very top of that agenda. It's hard to envision a Carney government simply caving on the DST. There is a lot of money at stake, and caving without anything in return certainly isn't going to happen, and I don't think anyone would advise it. In fact, even during the campaign, the issue of digital services tax did briefly arise. And in fact, Pierre Poilievre indicated that he too was supportive of tech companies paying their fair share. It's going to be hard to find anyone that wouldn't say they'd be supportive of that. And so there isn't necessarily political pressure internally to remove the DST, but there may be pressure that is external from the U.S. And one of the first things the government's going to have to decide is whether or not it simply goes ahead with that tax, or does it seek to leverage the prospect of the DST into some sort of deal that addresses some of the ongoing tariff issues and other concerns that we've got with the United States. There's not a lot of time to deal with that. As I say, this takes effect over the summer, but it's one of the very first issues where I think a decision is going to have to be made. The other short-term issue, although it's going to require, if we take action, longer-term policies and measures, has to do with data sovereignty. In some ways, some of the things that we've seen as a reaction to the U.S. tariffs and other speculation and comments that have come from President Trump has been to take a look at some of our existing policies and say, well, are these the sorts of things we would put on the table as part of a negotiated settlement? I mentioned the DST, but it's not the only example of this. We could think of payments under C-11 or C-18 as the online streaming and online news bills as somewhat similar in that regard. But the issue of data sovereignty in some ways is a bit more of an offensive approach to dealing with some of the concerns that we see coming out of the U.S. I think it's certainly fair to say that in recent months, the kind of risk analysis that exists when it comes to both sovereignty over Canadian data, sovereignty over Canada's digital infrastructure, has certainly increased in a way that we hadn't seen in the past. People are talking about it, companies are inquiring about it, and there are real questions about what a Canadian government can or should do to better safeguard Canada's digital sovereignty. I think this is one of the issues that government's going to have to think about, perhaps even as soon as the speech from the throne that will come towards the end of the month of May, as it talks about some of its priorities. And a Canada Strong approach might well include elements that that deal with digital sovereignty. Now, what that entails could be any number of different things. You know, the government's already talked about investment in AI infrastructure. Would it shift some of that money or increase some of its investment into cloud infrastructure to create a more sovereign cloud infrastructure that ensures that the network and the data itself remains in Canada? Might it mean prioritizing or moving ahead more rapidly with respect to privacy protections and the prospect of ensuring that Canadian data either stays in Canada through data localization measures, an issue that I talked about on a podcast episode several weeks ago, or perhaps looking to improve or enhance or strengthen Canada's privacy laws so that there would be penalties for unconsented disclosure of Canadian data, even if it leaves the jurisdiction. At this early stage, this probably involves more signaling priorities as opposed to actual action. But certainly in the short term, we'll get some sense, I think, as to whether or not Canada's digital sovereignty has emerged as a policy issue, with perhaps some hints about what the government has in mind to better safeguard it. Now, from a medium-term perspective, thinking about some of the priorities into the spring, but even more as we head into the fall, I think there are several that we can be thinking about. First, back to Bills C-11 and C-18, the streaming and news bills, it's pretty clear that neither of those laws are going anywhere. They were introduced and passed by the Liberal government. We have another Liberal government, and so that's nothing's going to change in that regard. The action, when it comes to at least one of those bills, this Bill C-11, will be at the regulator, at the CRTC, as well as in the courts. The CRTC put some of its work on Bill C-11 implementation on hold during the election campaign, but that will resume and is scheduled to resume in the coming weeks. That work includes establishing a new definition for Canadian content. So we can look for, in the coming weeks, hearings on some of these issues with decisions, I would think, certainly by the end of the year. Meanwhile, there are court challenges of the CRTC's initial implementation of Bill C-11, in particular, its requirements for payments that are 5% of Canadian revenues. And those court hearings, those challenges, are scheduled to be heard this summer in July. That process is going to take a bit longer. It's possible we could get a decision on those court cases by the end of the year. It's also perhaps a bit more likely that this drags into 2026, and certainly the possibility of an appeal of whatever decisions are forthcoming would extend those timelines even further. In the meantime, that means nobody gets paid under the Bill C-11 online streaming approach. At the moment, those payments are frozen, and it's likely going to take resolution of these court decisions before some of the money starts to flow, assuming that the outcome is that there is the possibility of those kinds of payments. As for the news side, Bill C-18, the distribution of the Google money, the $100 million a year that they agreed to contribute, has begun. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen reports that indicate how much different entities are getting on an entity-by-entity basis. And for some, it's significant amounts of money. In other instances, it's smaller amounts, but it's new money, might be viewed as found money. And so some may well be happy with that. In the grand scheme, for many entities, the law has really still caused more harm than good. Even with this new Google money, it's in some instances replacing old Google money where there were deals in place. Plus, of course, there is the lost revenue that would have come from Meta, from Facebook and Instagram, as well as the ongoing blocking of news on that platform. Now, it's hard to envision any changes in this regard. The Liberal government certainly continues to stand by the legislation. It was a Trudeau favorite. Whether or not it's a Carney favorite remains to be seen, but hard to envision at this moment a significant backtracking when it comes to this legislation. So when it comes to the news side, it's more issues that will remain a little bit quietly in the background. CRTC, for example, conducting a review of the screenshots or other workarounds that appear on Facebook as attempts to get around the news link ban. And we'll see how it rules when it decides to rule on whether or not Facebook might still be incorporated within the law on the basis of some of those workarounds. And there is also the prospect of the Competition Bureau getting involved. There was a complaint filed many, many months ago, more than a year ago now. We'll see if they do anything with that. Beyond Bill C-11 and C-18, there is also, I think, in a medium-term basis, privacy legislation. Now, as I mentioned, it's possible that a strategy around digital sovereignty from a Canadian perspective might well include a strong linkage to privacy legislation. Indeed, I think we could certainly foresee a restart of the privacy bill, Bill C-27, perhaps this time without the AI bill. So government's attempts at privacy reform started as first a privacy bill. Then when it was reintroduced, it included the AI bill. I think it's certainly possible that we could see yet another reintroduction, and this time with the AI bill, which never really achieved much of a consensus and was the subject of considerable amount of criticism, going back to the drawing board or at least incorporated within a broader AI strategy. When it comes to privacy, though, there was generally pretty broad consensus about the need for privacy reform, about how outdated Canada's existing privacy laws are. And there's a chance for pretty reasonable, quick success when it comes to this legislation. That doesn't mean that there won't be extensive study and hearings. In fact, the last hearings on C-27, because they were trying to deal with both privacy and AI, raised some real concerns about the ability to do deep dives into either of those bills. Bringing back just privacy would allow for a more careful, closer examination of the privacy-related provisions. But given that there is, I think, a broad consensus within, at least among stakeholder groups, both on the civil society privacy side, as well as on the corporate marketing side, that Canada would benefit from some privacy changes, the prospect of bringing something forward, linking it in certain respects to some of the data sovereignty-related issues, really does hold a significant amount of promise, I think, for a government looking for some early wins when it comes to these issues and more broadly the relationship with the United States and the rest of the world when it comes to Canadian data. The third element that I think we will see over the rest of the year in that medium term is to, I think, frankly, prioritize setting the strategy when it comes to both digital and cultural policy. Now, the cultural side will no doubt include the CRTC rulings that I mentioned a moment ago. I think it also includes implementing the new vision for the CBC. We had the former Heritage Minister, Pascal Saint-Ange, put forward what it appears to be the government's position on where it would like to go with respect to the CBC. Whether all of that gets adopted or not remains to be seen, but coming forward with the outlines of what the government wants to do with respect to these files is something that I think we'll see, if not before the summer, sometime in the fall. I think we might also well benefit from a better sense of the digital strategy and policy priorities there. In particular, it seems to me that AI is likely to be the issue that dominates in that regard. Last government was a bit scattered, it seems to me, when it came to AI. You know, they introduced the AI bill within C-27, but there wasn't a lot there, and it was only under some pressure that they began to put a bit of meat on the bones. But the approach was, by and large, trying to emulate an EU approach with the EU AI Act that itself has fallen somewhat out of favor in many places. And one of the things Canada is going to have to think about is, well, what is our priority when it comes to AI? Is it about government spending money to help facilitate and grow an AI sector? Is it about regulation? And how do you regulate in a way that achieves some of your policy objectives, but at the same time doesn't hamper or hurt Canada's competitiveness when it comes to attracting AI investment and growing some of those AI companies? There's also undoubtedly a copyright dimension here. A lot of discussion around the copyright implications, especially for generative AI, both in terms of the use of materials to teach these systems for machine learning purposes, as well as the outputs in terms of copyright protection that might accrue to works that are ultimately generated by these AI systems. You know, I think copyright itself for the government is always going to be a bit of a thorny issue, and the prospect of yet another review of copyright that includes not just AI but other issues, something that we're at least likely to see within this general mandate. But we might get a sense of where it ranks within a broader AI strategy should the government choose to set some of this out and provide itself with a bit of a framework for where things go when it comes to both legislation and policy in the area. Looking ahead longer term, there are at least three things, but there's undoubtedly a whole bunch more that we could think about. Three that I think are worth highlighting. These are things that take us into 2026 and beyond. The first would be online harms, which I must admit, it is possible that we could see an online harms bill reintroduced even in the coming year. But given the dominance of some of the issues with the Trump administration and some of the significant changes that the government has in mind when it comes to Canada's approach to even interprovincial trade and our various trading partners, whether or not there is the time and the bandwidth, so to speak, to prioritize online harms right off the bat strikes me as a little bit unlikely, but we'll see. Now, it does feel like the government may take an even broader approach when it comes to online harms. Last bill got a generally positive or from some lukewarm response when it came to at least the elements that were dealing specifically with platforms and online harms. There was far more criticism when it came to the criminal code provisions and the Human Rights Commission provisions. The government ultimately said that they would split the bill and focus specifically as a priority on the online harms element with respect to platforms. I think it's somewhat reasonable to expect that a new bill will do exactly that. The mistake of trying to bring in all these additional elements will not be repeated. That said, I think it's quite possible that we will see other harms included. So it will be a narrower bill in the sense it would deal exclusively with platforms, but a broader bill in the sense that the online harms themselves will grow beyond the seven that were included in that initial bill. And in particular here, I'm thinking about the prospect of including disinformation or perhaps even misinformation within the confines of this legislation. That's certainly the way we've seen Mark Carney talk about some of these issues, thinking about online harms and thinking about it not just within the context of bullying or revenge porn or some of the identified harms that existed in the prior bill, but thinking about some of the more recent lived harms that people might identify around disinformation. Perhaps we see that at the end of this year. If not, we see it in 2026, but it's certainly something that I think is in all likelihood coming back. A second long-term issue has to do with trade. And on this, there is, I think, a lot of activity on a number of different fronts. The government's made it very clear that it has to rethink and wants to rethink some of the trade-related relationships that it has. Reliance on the United States, we are told, is a thing of the past. And so that has some pretty big implications for any number of different trade deals, and there are digital elements in all of them. There's, of course, first off, the USMCA, the deal that we have with the United States and Mexico. It's scheduled for renegotiation in about a year. There are any number of digital trade issues here. Liability for platforms, the tax-related issues, copyright-related issues, all of those things could make their way into the discussion. Perhaps even more, there are other trade agreements. The DEPA, the Digital Economy Partnership Agreement, it's an agreement that started with three countries, largely in Asia, led by Singapore and New Zealand, but we've seen that gradually expand to South Korea. There's a real possibility that Canada will want to be part of that as well, and that would increase the kinds of provisions that we see in Canada from a digital perspective. There's also trade negotiations with other jurisdictions. There's the ACAFTA, which is a trade deal that's being discussed with ASEAN countries and in some ways would supplement the existing CPTPP. On again, off again, discussions with India, discussions about our trade strategy with Africa, the EU deal that's still a little bit on the shelf given the need for some approvals there. A strategy to expand Canada's trade relationships might well include all of these parts of the world, and there are important digital components here too. And finally, the third issue that I think that we're going to think much about in the coming years is competition law. There's been a lot happening, especially in the United States and in Europe. In some ways, it started more in Europe with some aggressive moves, both from a legislative perspective with the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act, and then later attempts to enforce some of those rules. More recently in the United States, as people may have seen, there have been a number of initial court decisions taking on companies like Google that raise significant questions about how that company might be structured in the future and the application of antitrust or competition laws to some of the large internet companies. Canada has begun to move in this direction as well, whether it's with Google or Amazon or the Bill C-18 related issues. I think we could see more of that in the coming months, and Canada looking to exert some competition law muscle against some of those same companies so that it's not just about the making web giants pay strategy that we saw from the last government, but rather one that focuses more on competition and fair play when it comes to the markets here in Canada. Now, of course, this might just be the tip of the iceberg. We might well see copyright reform, as I mentioned, the prospect of a review of copyright sometime within the next couple of years. There's maybe a focus more on child safety when it comes to the online environment. Certainly cybercrime and our telecom infrastructure, that was Bill C-26 that advanced very far in the last parliament and might well be introduced in some form or a very similar form in the coming months. So there's a lot there. It's pretty clear there will not be a dull moment either politically and even more specifically when it comes to digital policy. And certainly I look forward as part of this podcast to be covering those issues as they unfold. That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES. At pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter @LawBitesPod or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.